So as I was telling Bob a moment ago, this book, The Nazi Conspiracy by Brad Meltzer and John Mensch, is about the secret plot to kill Roosevelt, Stalin, and Churchill. But it is more than that. It's a tight refresher of the horrors of the Nazi program to eliminate the Jewish population of Europe and anyone else that stood in their way. It's a reminder of the brutality of war, which you think you don't need to be reminded of until you read this, and then you find yourself saying, oh yeah, it was worse than I thought or recalled. This book is a spy thriller with the fine details on the plots to kill the Japanese architect of the attack on Pearl Harbor, to liberate imprisoned Mussolini, and to kill the Big Three. You get the remarkable prose of Churchill. Every time Churchill talks in this book, you go, wow, what a sentence. You get the necessary deceit of Roosevelt and the weight of the world on Stalin's shoulders and the dastardly, unconscionable programs of the Third Reich. And the story spins. Brad Meltzer joins us now. Hi, Brad. Welcome to the show.
Good to be back. Thank you.
I got to give you credit for keeping your eye on the prize, though. There are so many distractions, tangents in this story, tantalizing details and reminders, but you keep driving us towards this plot to assassinate the Big Three, which I never even heard about. Is it commonly known that the three leaders got together but once and that that was the scene of what could have been a great crime?
I certainly knew nothing about it. I found this story, and John, I don't think the internet's good for many things, but I think it's good for obscure historical facts. And this came through my feed a number of years ago, and I saw a secret plot to kill FDR, Churchill, and Stalin at the height of World War II. I was like, is this real? Is it true? And it's true. It really happened. And it was in 1943 as Stalin and Churchill and FDR were meeting for the very first time. And obviously, it led to the entire book, and for us, it was the adventure of a lifetime.
So before you get to the payoff, you've got to backtrack. Where do you start a story like this?
You know, let's paint the picture. It's 1943. It's the moment where Joseph Stalin wants the United States and Great Britain to invade continental Europe because he's getting decimated by the Nazis. He wants help. And we're sending munitions and weapons. But what he wants is us to invade from the east, to do what is basically becomes the invasion of Normandy. So this is the moment where FDI realizes that the Big Three have to get together. FDR, Churchill, Stalin have to get on the same page. They got to look each other in the eye. It's one of the only times in human history where millions of lives are at stake, and this meeting must take place. So Churchill flies to Tehran. Tehran, Iran is of all places where it takes place. And we begin here. FDR's motorcade is coming down the center of the city. Everyone is lined up and they're craning their necks and they're waving at the president. President's waving back. But what no one realizes is that that's not the president in the motorcade. It's actually a Secret Service decoy. The real FDR is across town. He's ducked down and hiding in the back of a beat-up sedan, racing through the side streets because they're worried that a Nazi assassin's about to murder him. And I just ruined chapter one of the Nazi conspiracy.
But that is literally where the book begins. And it's a great opening scene in the movie that will have to be made about this at some point. Yeah, I thought it was fascinating, though. So in the first couple of years of the war, it was being fought largely by the Germans and the Russians. And the losses were positively devastating in numbers that are almost hard to comprehend 70 years later, aren't they?
They really are. It took me off guard because, you know, we tell an American story of World War II, as we should. But when the Cold War happened, we really buried most of the stories about Russia because America doesn't tell stories about Russia where they're the heroes in during the Cold War. So the story changes about World War II. To give you context, the United States buried about 421,000 people in World War II. It's a huge number. Great Britain lost about 450,000. But the Soviet Union buried 24 million people. In the Battle of Leningrad, which is one of the ones you see in there, there's a moment where the Nazis storm Leningrad. They take the city. They don't want to deal with POWs. It's too much headache. So they just surround the city. Nobody gets in. Nobody gets out. And what they're doing is they're going to starve everyone to death, everyone in the city. They start eating dogs. Then they start in the city eating rats. Then they start looking at each other and thinking about eating the unthinkable, which they do as well. And within a year, it's the single greatest loss of human life in a major city in modern times. almost a million people die in Leningrad alone. So what the Nazis are doing there is devastating, and it shows you just why the big three really need to meet and get together and get on the same page.
Meanwhile, London is enduring bombing of its own, and you would think that Churchill and the British would have been anxious to engage on the Western Front to invade France, because that might push the Germans back. Certainly Stalin wanted that, but Churchill, of the three, was the last to sign on. Why were the British so afraid to engage the Nazis in France?
It really was the question that caught us off guard. You know, I like yourself, I'm a huge Winston Churchill fan. His speeches and everything he says are just inspiring to me to this day. I feel like his words to this day are words that we should live by. But it is absolutely true that he was the last person kind of dragging his legs, trying to not get into that invasion in the East with France. He was content for a while on just pushing the Mediterranean front, dealing with things and dealing with those parts in the lower part of Italy. And in the beginning, it was because he didn't think we had the manpower, think we had our act together. But eventually, there's no explanation. And FDR, you know, we've done a book on George Washington, the plot to kill him, one on Lincoln. But the one, now that we've done all three, what makes a great president is not who makes the best speeches. It's not who makes the most promises. It's the person who, when a disaster strikes, has the wherewithal and can pivot and just be in the right place at the right time and deal with that disaster perfectly. And I know people will debate the progressive agenda of FDR, but in terms of dealing with the big three, he is absolutely adept at one thing, and that is charm. He charms Stalin. He knows that Stalin, he's like, you know, Churchill, Stalin likes me better than he likes you. I got him. He charms Churchill. He brings these three together and lets them all be on the same page to say, we need to invade and we need Normandy to happen.
The complicity of the German people, I don't mean to disparage an entire nation today, but the number of people who are willing to do the Third Reich's bidding in Germany is still startling. And yet you remind us that there was a very much pro-Nazi, anti-Semitic movement in the United States. And there's a picture of a rally with George Washington's image on a flag. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, John, I so appreciate you bringing that up. You know, when Josh mentioned I'm a co-writer on this book, whenever we write one of these books about the secret plots to kill these amazing people, we know it's titillating to come on and say, here's the plot to kill Churchill, Stalin, and Roosevelt. But we always start with, what's the book really about? And for us, it was this rally. This, you know, when a few years back in Charlottesville, when we saw Nazis marching in modern times here in America, we all kind of wring our hands and we say, I can't believe this is happening in America. It feels like something that should happen in Germany or in Europe in the 1940s. And then we found this rally, a Nazi rally that took place in World War II in Madison Square Garden, the heart of New York City, 20,000 Nazis coming together and cheering. Because as you saw, we put the picture in the book because we're like, people won't believe it unless they see it. This is a true story. A giant picture of George Washington surrounded by swastikas. The first speaker of the day says that if George Washington were alive today, he'd be friends with Adolf Hitler. So why are we fighting Nazis in 2023? Because they've been here ever since. And to me, what the lesson of World War II is World War II is not that long ago. If you think about it, Anne Frank is born the same year as Barbara Walters. And it's the same recipe that we see over and over. We see Adolf Hitler as charismatic leader. He takes the, you know, these white native-born Germans who are suffering economically, and he says those words we see over and over, those people are the cause of your problem, those people. And he's talking, of course, about the Jewish people here. But we've seen it done with the black community and the gay community, the immigrant community, pick your minority community. But over and over, you'll see someone saying those people are the cause of these problems. And to me, when you hear those words, those people, that's when you need to use your voice. That's what that lesson from Madison Square Garden teaches me. And the American dream to me is not about making money. It's about when you see someone being bullied, when you see someone being picked on, you use your voice and you stand up and you say enough. That must be the lesson we teach.
We're talking to Brad Meltzer, who's written many books and from this New York Times bestseller is a real thriller, The Nazi Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill Roosevelt, Stalin, and Churchill. Before we go to the that part of the story, as I said, the meat of this thing is getting to this secret plot to assassinate them, which was unsuccessful. What all can you tell us about that? But I thought it was fascinating. You say, listen, there are sometimes unintended consequences. If, for instance, you know the architect of Pearl Harbor, who is the Japanese admiral who actually designed that and successfully carried out the sneak attack in Hawaii, and then you find out that he's going to speak to some troops. He seldom leaves where he works, but he's going to get on an airplane and fly. And you can intercept that little squadron of planes and shoot him out of the sky and kill him. If you do that, that might feel good, but it also might have unintended consequences. Like now they know that you know their secret code, and maybe they'll retaliate in a way that you can't anticipate. That sort of theme occurs several times in your book, doesn't it, Brad?
It really does. And you know, I think there are some history books that, you know, talk about the sweeping change of history in these big, you know, terms. And Josh and I, when we do these books, I just don't think that's how the world works. The world works, and it's run by people. And these decisions are hard. We tell the story of World War II in America, not just to tell the story of this skirmish, but it's a part of the American identity. When the government swooped in and did the right thing, and we all agreed the bad guys are the bad guys, and we saved the day. But that's like playing the greatest hits. You know, we play the greatest hits of World War II. We show you, you know, the storming of Normandy. We show you the death camps. We show you in the GIC. You see someone peering through, you know, from Auschwitz and through the barbed wire.
Yeah.
But we forget that it's really complicated. And assassination was a weapon that was being used. FDR did shoot Admiral Yamamoto out of the sky, the architect of Pearl Harbor. It has completely unintended consequences. There's a moment where Hitler's tried to be, they try to kill him, and there's a moment in the Alps and on a train, and there's a moment where the Nazis hear that they think Winston Churchill's on a commercial flight. They shoot that plane out of the sky, and it winds up it's not Winston Churchill, just someone that just looks at him. So over and over you see that assassination is a real weapon in everyone's arsenal.
Well, just think, too, about talk about unintended consequences with the best intentions. So to sort of bolster America's national feeling about how the war was going, we send Jimmy Doolittle on a raid, and for the first time we actually drop bombs in Japan, and America is thrilled that we can reach there, and boy, take that, Japan, now we hit you back. Our planes then had as a landing base location airfields in China. Japan can't attack us back. We're too far away, and Pearl Harbor's been done. So they say, we can't get America, but since planes are going to land in China, let's just kill people in China. And 200,000 people were murdered by the Japanese because China was a landing base, ostensibly, for these planes. I don't remember that
part
of the story.
Not only that, of course, and let's talk about those people. You know, we never tell the stories of those people, right? Let's talk about this Nazi plot. There's a, you know, we all know FDR, and we know Stalin, and we've heard the name, of course, Winston Churchill. I was fascinated by the people you've never heard of. There's a Nazi in the book named Otto Skorzeny. And Otto Skorzeny is paged by Adolf Hitler to come to Hitler's headquarters, to the place called the Wolf's Lair. And Skorzeny is a special operations guy, and what he realizes when he gets there is Adolf Hitler has brought together all of his special ops guys, his best fighters, because he wants to see who the true best one is. And he lines them all up in a big room, shoulder to shoulder, and Adolf Hitler quizzes them with one question. He says to them, what do you think of Italy? And they all give their macho answer, saying, well, Italy's on our side, and we will fight the United States to the death. But Otto Skorzeny shouts out above everyone, and this one Nazi says, I am from Austria, my Führer. And he's gambling here because he knows that Adolf Hitler is, of course, from Austria. And a true Austrian forever resents Italy because during the First World War, Italy took a key piece of Austria and never returned it. And in that moment, Adolf Hitler turns to Otto Skorzeny and he's like, you're my guy. And he sends Otto Skorzeny, I won't ruin this part of the book, but he sends Otto Skorzeny on a secret mission that is so crazy that when we were writing about it, we said to the editor, Josh and I said to the editor, that we need to put an actual photograph, again, in the book, because when people they will not believe this actually happened unless we can show them this moment what Otto Skorzeny does on this secret mission. You will see what he does on this mission. You'll see the photograph and why he earns the nickname the most dangerous man in Europe. It's the wildest Nazi story you've never heard in your life.
This is the plot to kill the big three, Stalin, Churchill, and Roosevelt. They did meet in Tehran. There was an effort to get them. Obviously, it was thwarted. And the way the meeting happened with decoys and deception is really remarkable. I highlighted a portion at the end of the book, too, where you just reminded us what Normandy was like in several hours of fighting. By the way, so that's the story. But I just can't help but just notice some of the other details about the war that took place. I was in Normandy a couple of years ago on the 75th anniversary of D-Day. In several hours of fighting during the Omaha Beach landing, 800 U.S. soldiers die. But while the bodies pile up along the shore, the ships and soldiers keep coming. By midday, they've established a footing, and by afternoon, some soldiers have reached the bluffs, but casualties along the beach continue to mount throughout the long day and evening. At nightfall, Americans have suffered roughly 2,400 deaths, but have landed 34,000 troops. Each of the beaches has its own story, yet in total, by midnight, June 7, over 150,000 troops have landed on the Normandy coast, and allies have established beachheads in each of the five zones. In the first 24 hours, though, the total number of U.S., British, and Canadian casualties is roughly 10,000, with a similar number on the German side. And that, by World War II standards, is a modest loss of life. I'm out of time, Brad. Is this going to be made into a movie with, Brad Pitt or somebody?
We should be so lucky. My wife's, of course, picking out what she wants to wear to the Oscars. But I just got to thank you for telling the story. You know, this book has been a dream of ours to be able to tell the stories of World War II in a way no one's seen. So I love the fact you read it and enjoyed it.
I did all of that. Is it going to be a movie? Is it optioned?
Not yet. We always put the books out and we say, we want people to read it first. I don't bring my stuff to Hollywood. I believe in the book. I believe in, you know, people listening to the audio and downloading it. And if they like it, then they'll call me. That's how we always do it.
The book is called The Nazi Conspiracy. Keep writing, Brad. Nice to talk to you.
Good to hear your voice. Thanks.